Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
2020 has been a year like no other.
It's going to be special. They're going to talk about it forever, baby. Y'all going to make a movie about this.
This football season is certain to follow that lead.
Might have been reading a press clipping that they're so good because they didn't show up today.
Questions like never before surround every team, both on the field and off of it.
I'm not really sure what's going on down there and why they made this move.
Will Mahomes barbecue the record books?
On third down and 15, and Mahomes guns it for 44.
Can Brady recapture the jewels for a gang of pirates?
The clock's ticking on everybody.
Will Trevor Lawrence make the Tigers the kings of the jungle?
Lawrence going to go and look long what he lost.
Lawrence makes a running grab.
Every week, the answers are right here, right now. It's Sunday Morning Football with your host, D.A., on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. We thank you for being part of our Sunday morning here on CBS Sports Radio. Damon Amendolara, DA, with you over the next hour. We'll preview today's NFL action. Our Vegas virtuoso, Larry Hartstein, is going to join us. Larry's had a tremendous record so far this season in the NFL, more than 20 games over 500. Very impressive. We'll get to that coming up here on the show in about 15 minutes from now. Also later on in the hour, we'll hear from a Hall of Famer, Pro Football Hall of Famer, looking back on Gale Sayers' tremendous career after we lost Gale Sayers earlier this week. And what he could have done in this type of NFL. It's part of your insiders a little bit later on in the hour as well. And as always, you can send us your tweets, DA on CBS. Follow me and tweet at me there, DA on CBS. And dial me up on the phone at 855-212-4CBS. Get 855-212-4227. In fact, speaking of social media, you can follow me on Instagram as well, because every single day I post a good mojo picture, a good feeling, smile-inducing picture on my Instagram feed. And today, remember back in the late 80s, you could collect NFL head coach trading cards? Oh, yeah. All types of goodness. So today's picture is the American hero, Marv Levy. Not only because he led the Buffalo Bills to four consecutive Super Bowls, but also because he was a World War II veteran. People might not realize this, but he served in World War II. It's amazing that Marv Levy has had such a tremendous sides of his life in two fronts. He's 95 years old. He's amazingly still with us, which is tremendous. And you could once upon a time collect the football card of Marv Levy as a head coach, as the Bills are 2-0, trying to move to 3-0 today against the Los Angeles Rams. So you can follow me on Instagram for my good mojo picture of the day. You can check out my archives of previous ones as well in my Instagram stories. That's at Damon Amendo, at Damon Amendo. Those good mojo pictures usually are of the retro variety. It's time to come in hot, boys and girls.
Two to one, you've got a pair of bogeys. 12 o'clock.
30 plus years of service. Only man to shoot down three enemy planes in the last 40 years.
Attention, air control. Someone tell DA he's coming in hot.
The end is inevitable, Maverick. Your kind is headed for extinction.
Maybe so, sir. But not today.
It's only September 27th, but I think we can confidently say once again, you can't trust the Big 12 in the college football playoff. Yesterday, Oklahoma, who's the class of the Big 12, had a 21-point lead over K-State, a 3-touchdown lead over K-State. If you're Oklahoma and you've got designs to the college football playoff, you cannot under any circumstances barf away a 21-point lead to K-State. And yet, here we are. Let's listen into Wyatt Thompson, Learfield, IMG College, to the K-State call.
Here's the kick. It's got a chance, and it is good from 50. K-State has the lead with 4:32 to go. It's 38-35. 41 seconds to go. Here come the Cats. Rattler under some pressure. Fires, and it's intercepted. It's intercepted by the Wildcats. Jerron McPherson with now just 34 seconds to go. Oklahoma does not have a timeout. Rattler with his third pick of the day.
I mean, congratulations to K-State. Give them credit. But I just want to remind you that the Wildcats lost to Arkansas State at home this year. Kansas State had lost to Arkansas State at home this year and just came back from a 21-point deficit to beat the number 3 Sooners. My goodness. And I'm supposed to take this team or this conference seriously. I'm supposed to take this Big 12 seriously in the college football playoff? Come on. Oklahoma had led 35-14. K-State scored every point the rest of the way. And again, a tremendous job of fighting back by K-State. But if that's the best team of the Big 12, you're going to convince me that they belong in one of the final four slots of this year's college football playoff. There's no leg to stand on. This happens in the Big 12 routinely because they play so little defense that no matter what lead you have, it's never safe. I mean, Texas Tech leads by 15 points with 3 minutes to play yesterday, and Texas comes back to win as they score 63 by the time we get to overtime. And then yesterday, Oklahoma has a 3-touchdown lead in the second half against K-State at home, by the way, and blows it to a squad that lost to Arkansas State. That's all unacceptable, and that's why you just can't trust the Big 12 in the college football playoff. It's just fact. I hate to break it to you, but it's just fact. Today, one of the most interesting matchups in the NFL is the Seahawks and the Cowboys, and I believe that Seattle is going to expose Dallas today.
It's going to take you a little longer. We need some more games here to figure out, you know, what they're doing. Returning the same offensive coordinator in a very productive offense a year ago, you know, Kellen's kind of, there's a lot of similarities in what they've done that aren't exactly the same as what Mike does.
We need to take a big step and go win a game against an excellent opponent that's playing extremely well on offense. I mean, you can't say enough what they've done offensively the first two games.
That's the two coaches, Pete Carroll and Mike McCarthy. Give me Seattle all day long in this game. Remember that the Dallas Cowboys looked very clunky in their opener against the Rams, and then last week should have lost that game. If Dan Quinn wasn't the worst head coach ever with a lead, they would have lost that game. Remember, the Dallas Cowboys began that game down 20-0 to Atlanta. And it was only because the Falcons gave away possessions and their defense is the best gag artist of all time. And then the special teams unit didn't know they could jump on an onside kick and the whole thing just collapsed like a house of cards. It's only because of all of that that the Cowboys even got a win last week. Now, I'm going to give Dak Prescott of the offense some credit here. But also, Mike McCarthy was like a drunken sailor playing with multiple fake punts getting stuffed and multiple fourth downs. I just don't like the way that Mike McCarthy has called these games the first 2 weeks. And I realize the Seahawks defense is struggling at this point in time. But give me Seattle, because I don't think there's any way that the Cowboys have what it takes to go to Seattle and win. And I don't think that they have any chance of slowing down or stopping what Russell Wilson is doing right now. Wilson's playing at such a remarkable level. And here's a great stat for you. Last year, the New England Patriots secondary gave up 4 passing touchdowns to wide receivers. 4 of them, okay? They gave up 4 touchdowns to wide receivers last year. The Patriots defense gave up 4 touchdowns to wide receivers on Sunday night against Russell Wilson. That's how good Wilson is, especially with his deep ball right now. He's just threading the needle. DK Metcalf is a real problem for secondaries. He's just too strong. He's just too fast. And I think they're going to expose the Dallas Cowboys defense today. I don't trust Mike McCarthy on the road. I don't trust McCarthy's play calling. And I don't trust the Cowboys defense to slow down Russell Wilson. I think you're going to see a Seahawks team come up with a victory and look good doing it. And finally, let's look at this matchup of Tom Brady heading to Denver. The stats are not good for a Brady-led offense on the road against the Broncos. And I know that this Broncos defense does not have Von Miller. And I know that Tom Brady and the Patriots are different than Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. But I think when you hear Brady speak, even he knows they're a long ways away from where they need to be.
Execution was a little bit better. I think we still are a long ways from where we need to be. So I think we have the ability to make plays. I think consistency, dependability are going to be things that we really need. So got to get back to work. And the clock's ticking on next week.
I think the Buccaneers are way overrated today in Denver. I realize that the Broncos are without their starting quarterback, Drew Lock. Jeff Driscoll, 27-year-old journeyman, is going to get the start under center. I realize the Buccaneers have the star power, and I realize they got back to looking like a Tom Brady-led offense in Week 2 last week. But I just don't think this matches up well for where the spread is. The Broncos are 6-point underdogs at home. If you look at Brady throughout the years in Denver, he has a losing record. He's 4-7 all-time against the Broncos. And this includes much better teams with the Patriots than he has today. He lost in his first season starting in 2001 through 4 INTs in that day. He lost in 05 as well going to Denver. In 2009, threw just for 215 yards and took the L. He lost in 2015 in Denver and lost 3 different playoff chances at Mile High as well. In 05 against Jake Plummer, he threw for 2 interceptions and then 2 AFC Championship game losses as well. The most recent being in 2015 when the Broncos won the Super Bowl, where he threw for 2 INTs as well. Brady does not historically play very well at Denver. In fact, out of all of the times he's been at Denver, 11 different games at Mile High, he's only 4-7 in a handful of only 300-yard performances. Oftentimes, he throws for under 300. So to me, I think a 6-point spread for the Buccaneers on the road. We don't really know how good the Buccaneers are. And we know that the Mile High thin air has given teams problems, including the Patriots and Tom Brady in the past. I think the idea that they're going to go there and win easily, to me, is far-fetched. I think they're way overrated going into Denver today. And that is coming in hot. When we come back here on the show, we're going to talk to our Vegas virtuoso, Larry Hartstein, and he's been really good this season. There's some really interesting lines to dissect going into today's NFL action. As I mentioned, the Buccaneers are 6-point favorites on the road. Are they that much better than the Broncos? Also, we'll look at the two big ones, Sunday night and Monday night. Tonight, Packers and Saints. Should the Saints be 3-point favorites at home with as good as the Packers have looked? Also, early today, some games. Bears and Falcons. The Falcons are 0-2, and the Bears are 2-0. And yet Atlanta is the favorite. Why is that? Interesting one. With the Rams and Bills today, both teams are 2-0. The Bills are 2-point favorites. The Browns should probably never be a touchdown favorite versus anybody, but they are today against Washington. We'll dissect it all coming up with Larry Hartstein, our Vegas virtuoso, next. Damon Amendolara, DA, here on CBS Sports Radio.
Winners, whiners, wise guys. Every week we scour the NFL odds to see where you should plunk down your scratch.
Place your bet.
Sunday Morning Football, making wagering fun again.
You win.
Our friend Larry Hartstein from Sportsline joins us, CBS Sports gambling writer. Larry has joined us in the past before, and boy, he is on a hot streak since last season. He is 65-44 against the spread. That is an amazing plus 21. 21 games over 500 since last season against the spread. He joins us this morning on the show to allow us to pick his brain on today's action. Larry, good morning. How you doing?
Great, DA. Great to be with you.
Always great to be joined by you as well. And let's look at some of the intriguing lines today. The Bears are 2-0, the Falcons are 0-2, and yet the Falcons are favored. Why?
Well, I mean, you look at those two offenses and you look what the Bears did in the second half against the Giants, exactly nothing. And it does seem like this is the game where the Falcons take out all their frustration. But they do lose their rookie corner is out with a COVID test. And, you know, actually, Mitchell Trubisky, shockingly, has actually played better this year. I know a lot of the numbers may not seem so. He's had some beautiful passes dropped. And when this line was 4, I grabbed the Bears. I just think their offense is going to move the ball and have success against a terrible Falcons defense, but definitely would not be surprised by the Falcons winning outright or winning by a field goal. But at a good number, I took the Bears.
The Browns take on Washington in Cleveland. And I don't know the last time Cleveland was favored by a touchdown or more, but they are today. They're 7-point favorites at home. I know Washington is bad, but are the Browns good enough to be a touchdown favorite against anybody in the NFL?
It is hard to stomach, and they haven't been good in this spot historically, laying this many points. And even laying 5.5 the other day or 6 against the Bengals, they couldn't prevent that backdoor cover from Joe Burrow. But Dwayne Haskins isn't playing as well as Joe Burrow. So I actually do like the Browns to win and cover.
Interesting. Raiders and Patriots today. We have a Patriots team that comes off an impressive Sunday night against the Seahawks despite a loss, because Cam Newton looked so good throwing it, but they couldn't stop Russell Wilson defensively. He just carved him up. Do we expect the same today from a Raiders team that's starting to get a little juice as the Pats are favored by 6.5?
Yeah, a lot of money coming in on the Pats, and I totally agree with it. This is just the worst possible spot for the Raiders. Traveling on a short week after a huge emotional win, Derek Carr 1-4 against the spread. The last 5 times he's played on short rest. I mean, Bill Belichick off a loss. I mean, one more yard and this team would be 2-0, and I think we would be looking at a line that said 7. So getting it less than a touchdown, I think the Raiders are much improved, but just a terrible spot.
Larry Hartstein is our guest from Sportsline, our Vegas virtuoso this morning. We know the Niners are as banged up as anybody in the NFL. Jimmy Garoppolo will not play today. In his place, Nick Mullins will start. This is on the road against New York. West Coast team coming to the East Coast to play the Giants with an early kick. But the Niners are still favored by 3 points. What do you think about the Niners being favored today?
Well, I mean, you know, by reputation and look what they did to the Jets, they do deserve to be favored. But I took the Giants early when it was plus 4. I'm just impressed with the chemistry on the Giants. I know it hasn't shown up with a win yet, but, I mean, that 19-play drive against the Steelers the first week against an elite defense, if Daniel Jones, and he should be able to avoid those huge mistakes against this totally depleted Niners defense. Nick Mullins is not a bad backup at all, but I just think Daniel Jones can avoid those big mistakes and keep the Giants close today.
It's a huge line in Indianapolis. The Colts are 11.5-point favorites. 11.5 today against the Jets, who come into town. And I'm guessing largely this is because of how bad the Jets have looked in the first 2 weeks. What do you think about that big of a number for the Colts today?
Yeah, I mean, there is no worse team than the Jets. But if you look at teams that are 0-2 against the spread, the last 4 years, they're 22-7 against the spread in week 3. Mm. And the Jets fit it. And you know, this look-ahead line was about 7, so it's gone way up. And, you know, I held my nose and I took the Jets. I grabbed 11.5. I mean, I don't even want to watch it, but out of principle, I had to do it.
The Buccaneers travel to Denver today. The Broncos are without Drew Lock. They'll be starting Jeff Driskel instead. Seemed like the Buccaneers offense started to get on track last week, but the Bucs are a big favorite, 6-point favorite on the road at Mile High. And Tom Brady actually has a losing record all time in Denver. He is 4-7. What do you think about the Bucs laying 6 today?
I don't like it. I don't have a strong play on this game, but if I leaned, I would take the Broncos in the points. I mean, I think Jeff Driskel consistently underrated as a backup. He can move the team, and Denver fights and keeps it close and had a chance to win in Pittsburgh last week. So, yeah, if you force me, I'd take the point.
I want to dissect this Chargers line because the Chargers have their rookie quarterback starting again. That would, of course, be Justin Herbert after the Tyrod Taylor disaster where the team doctor accidentally punctured his lung last week. So Herbert played well in his first start in week two. Coming into week three, though, the Chargers are nearly a touchdown favorite right now against the Panthers. They're 6.5-point favorite. What do you think about a young man getting his second start ever and already being favored by 6.5? Is that too big?
Yeah, it's a very tall order, and the Panthers fit that system again. Teams that are 0-2 ATS and getting so many points, and I thought Mike Davis stepped in very well. And yeah, I just think this is a totally different situation. It's when you have a whole week to prepare and you know you're the starter. I don't think you can expect the same type of surprise attack that he pulled last week. I think there'll be some mistakes, some rookie inconsistency. And yeah, I took the point.
Cowboys and Seahawks. This one's a big one. Late window on Fox. The Seahawks are 2-0. Wilson's been amazing. And they are 5-point favorites later on today. Where do you lean on Cowboys plus the 5?
Yeah, this line is so inflated. I mean, the Cowboys, they won the game. They had 4 fumbles. They had 2 fourth down failed conversions. Their offense is just as good as the Seahawks, and losing Bruce Irvin was huge. Seattle is giving up over 9 yards of play when he's not on the field this week. So I just think big shootout, definitely take the points.
Packers and Saints, that's tonight's game. Rodgers and Brees. Brees has not really looked like Drew Brees in the first 2 weeks. The Saints are favored, though. Now, this is interesting because the Packers have played so well in the first 2 weeks, and there really isn't much of a home field advantage these days because you can't have the fans in attendance. So what do you think about the Saints being favored by a field goal tonight?
I think if you can get it at 3, that's really good value. The look-ahead line was 5.5, and the Saints, historically, this is when they turned it on, week 3 and onward. They've been terrible the first 2 weeks against the spread. They had the big win. It was a very big spot against a division rival at home. And then last week, it was a natural letdown, and we saw Drew Brees, that wounded duck over the middle that turned the game right before halftime. And, yeah, he can't throw downfield, but Aaron Rodgers is not going to have Devontae Adams. So that kind of evens things out, and I just think the Saints laying a field goal at home, this is still a better defense than what Green Bay has faced so far in the Vikings and Lions.
Larry Hartstein, Sportsline, joins us this morning for our Vegas segment. Bengals and Eagles. The Eagles are 0-2, but so are the Bengals, and the Eagles have a lot of problems offensively. Carson Wentz is really struggling. Yet they are 5-point favorites at home. So Vegas clearly feels as though the Eagles might be 0-2, but they're much better than the Bengals. Do you agree?
I do, and I laid the points. You know, the Eagles have been terrible. Carson Wentz has made some just horrific decisions, driving for the lead against the Rams on first down from the Rams 20, throws into double coverage in the end zone, completely unnecessary. I think they get back to making the simple throws, the simple plays. The Bengals are last in yards per play on offense, as good as Joe Burrow was, and they can't stop the run at all. I mean, Cleveland rushed for 200, could have been 300. Miles Sanders should go wild. I think the Eagles win it by a touchdown.
One of the most interesting matchups of the day, the Rams coming east to take on the Bills. Early window. This one's going to be in Buffalo. Both teams are 2-0. Josh Allen starting to shake off some of the critics with good play in the first 2 weeks. The Bills are favored by 2. Where do you lean on this?
This is probably the toughest game for me, D.A. I really don't have a strong feel on this. I'm just going to watch, sit back, and enjoy. I just know that the Bills, and as much hype as Josh Allen has gotten deservedly, let's look at the two teams they destroyed. You know, the Jets, and I mean destroyed offensively, the Jets and the Dolphins. This is going to be a much tougher test. that Rams secondary is a lot better than anyone thought it would be. So, you know, I'm going to watch it and study it, but I would lean to the Rams.
Finally got the Monday Nighter, which is just going to be awesome. Chiefs and Ravens, two best teams of the AFC, perhaps the two best teams in football. And rarely do you see Patrick Mahomes getting points. He's getting 3.5 in Baltimore tomorrow night. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a great spot for the Chiefs. You know, a down week last week, almost lost the game. People thinking they're down, and now they get a full field goal and a half with Patrick Mahomes. I mean, even if the Ravens go up 10, which they very well might, you can always come and get that back door. And I just do not think this is a blowout, so definitely take the point.
Finally, is there a number out there, a total, an over-under, a prop that you really like today?
There's a few, but I think the Eagles, you know, getting it, I got it all the way down at 4. I don't know what your books are currently showing, but I just think this is their game. I mean, if they lose this game, if they don't come out and play well, you know, who knows what might happen. This is just an all-in effort against a terrible defensive team and an offensive team that hasn't done much right either. So I just think this is Philly's day.
Larry Hartstein writes for CBS Sportsline. I highly encourage you to check him out on Twitter as well, at Larry Hartstein, because he's got some great information and nuggets there. Sportsline senior analyst, CBS Sports gambling writer. And against the spread since last year, he's 65-44, 21 games over 500 against the spread. That is huge. Larry, it's always great to catch up with you, man. Thanks so much for doing it this morning.
Anytime, DA.
You got it. Larry Hartstein joining us from Sportsline. He has been on a heater since last year. 21 games over 500. Got to listen to him. So coming up here, we've got the thoughts from one of the greatest college football players ever on how to focus amidst all the craziness in college football this year. We've got a Pro Football Hall of Famer weighing in on Gale Sayers and the passing of a legend and what he would have done in today's NFL. And a quarterback analyst looking at who has more left in their arm, Tom Brady or Drew Brees. That's all coming up as part of the Insider segment next. Damon Amendolara, DA with you here on Sunday Morning Football on CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Television Sports presents the National Football League.
You're locked in to Sunday Morning Football on CBS Sports Radio with your host, D.A. We ask those who are in the game for their thoughts on the game.
Congratulations, man. That's all.
It's time for The Insiders.
I'll knock you out.
Today, the NFL on CBS features some fantastic matchups featuring the league's top contenders, including the Raiders on the road against the Patriots. Deshaun Watson of the Texans desperate at 0-2, taking on the Steelers. It begins with the JB and the guys getting you set for the day starting today at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, only on CBS. Only about 20 minutes away from the pregame show starting up, including the NFL Today. So stick around for that on CBS. We like to lead you into the pregame shows here on Sunday Morning Football, 10 until noon Eastern time. So it's time now for our Insider segment, and we begin with Tim Tebow. I had Tim on the show earlier in the week, and you know, college football has been an interesting situation, interesting dynamic, because they've had so many conferences that have, you know, hesitated to play, decided on whether it was safe to play, weighed all the options of safety and protocol, and we've had multiple games postponed, including the Notre Dame game this week, which was the first really significant football game that was postponed, but it certainly won't be the last. And I had asked Tim Tebow, who is always renowned as a great leader, one of the greatest leaders in college football history, a two-time champion, a Heisman Trophy winner, how he would motivate his locker room to remain disciplined and not test positive or not have outbreaks and make sure the games are being played.
It's the only way to be able to live out your dream, is to be able to follow the rules and the regimens. And you know, I really believe that a lot of these kids are doing a great job at following it. Your team's got to be disciplined, because a few people not buying in could ruin it for everybody. And so I think this is where great leaders really got to step up. And I know that they're doing it all around the country. I've talked to a bunch of young men that are encouraging their team, hey, listen, guys, we can't do silly things. We can't put ourselves in harm's way. It's not just about, you know, practicing hard and lifting hard and preparing for the game. It's also about understanding, you know, social distancing, putting on our masks, you know, and not going to places that we don't need to be. And I think there's a lot of kids that are doing it really well right now. Something like this could totally throw off a great team. And maybe the best team in the country doesn't win it this year because they don't figure out how to be able to manage all these different things.
It's so interesting to dissect the differences between the NFL and college football, because I think what we're learning is actually playing of football is not the danger here. It's the lifestyles of the guys that are playing. And what we're seeing is right now, the NFL is just kind of going on without any type of hiccups. And there was so much hand-wringing during the summer that the NFL would never be able to play without a bubble. They would never be able to figure out a way to play without a bubble. And through 3 weeks, we've had very limited positive tests. We've had no games postponed, no forfeitures. And I think what's kind of amazing is they've played the NFL as though there wasn't really much of a problem. I'm sure they're being incredibly disciplined, but from what we know on the outside, it has felt like business is as usual. And I think the big difference, while college has really stubbed its toe, multiple forfeitures. I mean, every week there's teams that can't play, schools that can't play, multiple conferences that are still not playing. I think the difference is lifestyles and accountability. When you are a paid professional in the NFL and you are responsible for mortgages and educations and your kids and your wife and your family, making sure you do all the little things to remain employed is a lot different than playing in college. And so it just feels like the NFL players are just in a different space from experience and age of how to do and what to do the right things. Also, the NFL was able to get the NFLPA to sign off on, if you test positive, if you contract the coronavirus by being irresponsible, things like casinos and strip clubs, etc., and you miss games, you don't get paid. And that's a big deterrent for NFL players. For college kids, they're around the rest of the student body consistently. And I think they just don't have that type of feeling of, you know, my entire family's relying on my paycheck. So I think those two things make it very different. And what Tim Tebow was saying was, you've got to appeal to the sensibilities of the players, saying, this is your dream. Do you want to kick away your dream by being irresponsible? Which is a lot different than kick away your financial security. It is, this is your chance to play the thing that you love, to do the thing that you love. That should be what holds you accountable. Really interesting. The world lost Gale Sayers, a gentleman in every single way, and one of the greatest running backs ever in NFL history at the age of 77 this week. And I had James Lofton join me on the show, NFL on CBS analyst and also Pro Football Hall of Famer. And I asked James, he had played after Gale Sayers. Sayers, his career was done by the early 70s. James didn't come along to the late 70s. But I said, how do you think Gale Sayers would have done in today's NFL? Would he have been productive? Here was James Lofton.
He would have been dominant. I mean, think about him in the open space. Think about him in a Sean Payton offense. Think about him running some of the things that running backs are allowed to do now. And the fact that you can't lead with the helmet, you can't clothesline him as he's coming through the line of scrimmage. Yeah, the Kansas comment would have been pretty good in 2020.
I just want to reset the type of career that Gale Sayers had, because his career would have been even more had he never suffered the ACL tear, the knee injury, but he did. In just 5 seasons in the NFL, because his last 2 years, he played a total of 7 years, but his last 2 years barely count. He played a total of 4 games over those last 2 years, 2 in each season. So he essentially has a 5-year career. In all 5 years, he is a Pro Bowler. In those 5 years, he plays a total of 61 games. In those 5 years, he has the type of career that makes him a first ballot NFL Hall of Famer. We went through this with Terrell Davis a couple of years ago. It's a short time span. Injuries curtailed his career, but when he was doing it, he was one of the greats. How much do you factor in the injuries, the shortened career? And that kept TD out of the Hall of Fame for a number of years. Gale Sayers was a first ballot guy. There was not a doubt. He was an NFL Hall of Famer by 34 years old. He retired at 29. He was a first ballot Hall of Famer in Canton giving his acceptance speech at 34 years old. That's how much respect he got from his peers. Also, he was a member of the NFL's 50th anniversary team, 75th anniversary team, and last year's NFL 100, which means over 100 years of the NFL has elapsed, and he is still considered one of the greatest running backs ever to play, and he did it in 61 games. That is the equivalent of 3.8 16-game schedules, less than four 16-game schedules. He created a legacy that was one of the greatest ever over 100 years of football. He was breathtaking in his speed and his agility. He was winding through broken fields with such grace. It was unlike anything we'd ever seen before. You got to remember that at that time in the 60s, the NFL's running backs over the first 30 to 40 years of existence for the NFL was grinders, punishing power backs. And it was the era of Jim Brown and power backs that just mauled people, bigger, stronger, when they come through the hole and they can just take on a linebacker or a safety. Gale Sayers was a dart. He was a water bug. You could not catch him. He was so fluid and so graceful and so beautiful to watch. And at that time, it was like watching Baryshnikov run through the broken field. And also at that time, in the late 60s, when he suffers his knee injury, it is basically a death knell to your career. If you rip up your knee as a running back, you almost have no chance. I mean, think about the surgeries that Joe Namath had at his knees. And he was a quarterback. He was not asked to be nimble and agile. So in the 60s, if you had knee surgery at running back, your career's basically over. He still played. He still gained 1,000 yards after the knee injury, but he was never the same. You think about that today. If Gale Sayers played today with jet sweeps and wildcats and all types of spread formations, and with today's health and wellness, a knee injury like that would not have made his career over. I mean, think about it. Adrian Peterson came back after an ACL tear within a calendar year and had his best career year ever. So what Sayers did for that time is otherworldly. And he's still considered one of the greats ever, despite playing in only 60-some-odd games. Amazing. And finally, Pro Football Focus quarterback analyst Bruce Gradkowski joined me on the show earlier this week. And a lot of questions coming out of the first 2 weeks about Tom Brady and Drew Brees and how much they have left in their arms. And I asked Gradkowski, who grades out every throw of every quarterback every week, who does he think has more left in the tank, 43-year-old Tom Brady or 41-year-old Drew Brees?
Brady right now looks strong. I mean, Tom Brady for us, you know, week two, his 20-plus yards, grade downfield was 98.1. He had three big-time throws. Now, he also had two drops that came on the big-time throws, seven drops overall. So I just feel like Brady is, I mean, he's looking good. And Brady's issue in Tampa right now is just miscommunications, continuing to get on the same page with his wide receivers. And that takes some time. Look, he's in a brand new offense. It takes time to process it in live action. So that'll take some time. There's been no OTAs or mini camp, barely, you know, a fast training camp and no preseason games to really iron this stuff out. So that now is when Tampa Bay is doing it. But I think they'll pick up some steam and they're going to be, you know, they're going to be the team in that division.
So I'm going to disagree with Bruce here. I don't think Tom Brady's looked good. I know that week number two was a win, and I know that we saw in the highlight shows that back shoulder fade, that touchdown to Mike Evans. You know, that's not an incredibly difficult throw for most average quarterbacks in the NFL to make. And I think that because the Bucs won last week and because the offense was productive, people just kind of assumed that Brady was back. Most of that was running the football. Most of that was on the ground. And the Bucs pounded with Leonard Fournette. I still haven't seen a great Brady game yet in Tampa Bay, and we're only through 2 weeks, but I think there's a little bit of a assumption that last week, because the Bucs won, Brady played really well. That's not really the case. I don't think that either one of these guys is going to have a great season. I think we will see great patches. I think we'll see great moments. I think we'll see some great throws. But both Breeze and Brady are hitting their physical walls and limitations, and understandably so, and that's not blasphemy to say. 43 years old at starting quarterback in the NFL is ancient. And Tom Brady's done a great job keeping his body healthy and flexible, pliable, but you know, he's also seemingly dyeing his hair. He's probably got a little Botox in there as well. He is trying to give off the vibe of youth. You know, Johnny Unitas looked like he was wearing a toupee and had wrinkles. And George Blanda had big gray mutton chops. At 43 years old, you know, Joe Namath was hunched over. That was old. I mean, really old in the NFL. And Brady is doing a great job with the aesthetics, but he is not going to be Tom Brady this year that we know. He'll have some throws, maybe have some games, but neither he nor Drew Brees can escape Father Time. It's not going to happen. And this year, we're going to see both of those guys struggle for long stretches. There are a number of 0-2 teams today that had playoff aspirations, the Texans, the Eagles, the Vikings. Since 1980, six teams have begun the season 0-3 and made the playoffs. So if you go 0-3, six times it's happened since 1980. The Texans were one of those teams 2 years ago. The 98 Bills, 95 Lions, 92 Chargers, 82 Bucks, 81 Jets. I'm going to tell you this right now. If the Texans, Eagles, or Vikings fall to 0-3, I think it's game, set, match because of the divisions. You know, for the Vikings at 0-3, if they lose to the Titans today, they're not catching the Packers of that division. And, you know, if you can dig your way out of it to get to 8-8 or 9-7, that's not going to be good enough to get to the playoffs as a wild card. The Eagles at 0-2, maybe they could survive because I doubt the Cowboys as well this year. And we know the Giants and Washington aren't winning the NFC East. But for the Eagles, if they drop to 0-3 and lose to the Bengals at home today, that is truly disgraceful stuff. And if they're 0-3 and they've lost to the Bengals at home and Washington at home, I mean, forget it. Or Washington in week one, how can you possibly believe in them? And for the Texans, 0-3 is not the worst thing in the world because of who they played, Ravens, Chiefs, and Steelers today. But in that division, you're not catching the Titans at 0-3. So big game today for the 0-2 squads. That'll do it for us this morning here on Sunday Morning Football. Thanks to Ryan Hickey, executive producer of SMF. Thanks to Anthony Pierno on the Wheels of Steel. And thanks to Seth Cantor on your headlines. I'll see you tomorrow morning on the DA Show beginning at 6 a.m. bright and early Eastern time. Enjoy your football, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.